Which color would you never use on stage?
Yellow. Unless on request, or if the song is named Yellow Socks, then you have to use it somewhere, but it's not of my choice.
Well, which color suits the Nits best?
Blue. I don't know. Blue is an easy color. If I don't know what to do, I start with the blue and then I see which way it goes. But to be honest, white light is the best.
I always used a lot of effects and things, and only later on I heard that that's not so common. When I heard some engineers who were, I didn't use anything today, which was impossible for me. But the band anyway is not looking for sounds which other bands already make.
Je wil echt ook het Nederlands?
Ja, ja, ja.
Nou, ik ben Aad Link. Ik doe de zakelijke kant van de band.
En in Engels?
I'm Aad Link and I'm the manager of the band.
Dial Nits, a podcast about the Dutch band Nits. A celebration of five decades of sophisticated music from the Netherlands. Your host, Erik Fakon.
Je trouve c'est assez exceptionnel hein, l'amitié entre les trois que ils continuent et les quatre parce qu'il y a Ad leur manager qui pour moi est et je pense leur ingénieur lumière etc c'est une famille et ça c'est extrêmement appréciable je pense qu'ils étaient très très en avance sur le mode de fonctionnement qu'ont les artistes indépendants aujourd'hui.
They share a deep friendship, says record executive Mark Tonon, but it goes beyond the trio of musicians. Their manager Ad, the Tillman brothers on Light and Sound, it's a family. And their way of working predicts the functioning of indie bands nowadays. The ties between the members of the Nits go way back. One singer-guitar player went to kindergarten with a drummer. The other singer-guitar player to school with a guy who became the sound engineer. The latter in turn brought his younger brother along as a helping hand. He later became the lighting engineer. And the new keyboard player brought his friend, a roadie and sound engineer, who in time became the manager, Aad Link.
Aad's our manager, of course. That's a job. That's something that I cannot do and that he can do it. But I think he's also very important as a listener because he was there many, many moments, of course, of creation.
Always.
So then his comment, which was not pushy, not at all. You have to really open your ears to hear it, but when you hear it, then I always listen very carefully.
Yeah.
But when Aad said, this is something, you have to be careful with it. Don't throw it away. Then I take it very serious.
Yeah. He used to be, of course, he used to be a sound engineer as well. Because he was, when we recorded Tent, he was at studio doing the desk. In
Artisound.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And he also, I remember when we were recording at Real Light, the house engineer fell ill. We worked until 5 in the morning, I think, just because we had to finish the album.
I remember that.
He engineered it. Yeah. So we mixed. Yeah. We had to mix. So he did that very well. Yeah, yeah. That's one of the aspects of Aad.
Yeah, I don't know what to say because I work with like 55 years with him.
Yeah.
So
we are only Rob and I are only children.
Beginners,
in this.
We're beginners.
And their relationship goes further on into areas that we never seen.
Yeah.
I mean, to America, to the colony, Super Sister, of course, the whole history.
Well, it was of course very nice. The team, Aad and Robert Jan. Started it off, in fact, when we were playing at Paradiso, and
it was Aad who took me to the Paradiso.
Yeah, okay, well,
I mean, I liked the things I heard from the band and so, but he really dived into it.
And then he took me with him. Yeah, in those days, Aad had an agency together with a friend, Rock in Waterland.
And the Rock and Wattler was also doing Grupo Sportivo, which was that particular time was very popular. Robert Jan was the producer of their famous albums at that time.
Yeah.
So when Robert Jan came in, I mean, that meant, there's something going on. If he wants to produce it, that we didn't know. But that happened.
Yeah.
Those are really important moments in the career of Ben. And strangely enough, our route was circling around each other because you went your own way again with your own band.
With Transistor.
And then had no time to produce, and then Art and the band took the 10th production in our hands. And then later when Alex left, Robert just said, well, I can go with you on this German tour temporarily. And we rehearsed in 2-3 days again.
Yeah.
The whole oeuvre that we had at that time. That's an incredible history.
Yeah.
Well, it was really Art who initiated it.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a band called Super Sister. I was a crew member of an unknown band. I was working there, and then the drummer of Super Sister came to me and said, do you want to work for us? And I said, well, I didn't know the band, so I asked the guy from this band I was working for, and they said, oh, Super Sister, you should do this. This is a really great band. I saw them last week in a church with them. So I went with the band to somewhere in the north, and then there was Robert John. From that time I was with Super Sister. Yeah, from Super Sister I went to with him to Golden Earring, and from Golden Earring Suite the Buster, Rock and Waterland, Transistor, Nits. And the first gig I did the sound, nobody was taking care about the money, so I thought, where can I have my money for my work? So I decided to get to the club owner and collect the money for the band. So from that point on, it grew, and then I took over the management. I met a guy called John van Vuren, and he had a Grupo Sportivo. So we decided to make an office together. That was the start of Rock in Waterland. It's Sweetie Buster, they did very well. And John, he took another band, and I thought, well, I should have another one, and more what I really like. So I heard from a guy at Areola. He had seen the Nits on a party of Or, the music magazine. He really liked the band, and he said, you should go and see them. And we went to Paradiso on the small venue upstairs. And we seen the band, and we really liked it. We went and say hello. And from that point on, I start booking some gigs for them. From then on, part by part, we went further. It was just like a click. It would be fun and nice to work with them. It was fresh. The voices, the harmonies, it was really nice and fresh. And it was a big difference from a band like Sweetie Buster, which was like all musicians who were already for a long time on the road. That's a big difference than a band who's starting. That was the main difference, I think. First contact in Paradiso was nice with Robert Jan, special, and we liked it, and they had a booking office, but this guy was not really working very well, and I said, I will do some shows, and I put him in support of Sweetie Buster so they can play in clubs. this was really helpful. Robert Jump produced singles. And from there, I went to CBS and they released the single. So we had a contract for the Nits, which was very nice. When we got the permission to record an album, Tent, there was something we could share and, you know, and send around, and then things start rolling. The last day of the Tent album was in another studio and it should be remixed. And we had a guy from England doing mixing. And the whole day long, there was nothing and nothing happened. I mean, the mix was not good. And in the end, at around 11, I think, I said to the guy, we want to do it ourselves. And then in a couple of hours, I did the mix of 10, not all the songs, but I think 4 or 5 songs. And at 3 o'clock, it was finished. I listened back with a pleasure to those tracks, to the whole album. They were very keen and willing, you know. It was like young dogs into a studio where they could do what they really want. I'm not surprised the band is still around. No. And I'm happy the way it is now. This team works.
Next family member, Paul.
One of the famous Telemans.
One of the famous Telemans, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you know Paul longer than I did.
I know already from high school.
Yeah.
And I share this history of working in the concert building in Amsterdam in the 60s. We were teenagers. We worked there when all the bands were playing in the Concertgebouw. From Janis Joplin to the band, to Joni Mitchell. And when we started bands, first this Midas band with the brothers Brautigam. That was for 1 year, I think. Then Rob came in and we started the Nits with Michiel. And Paul was always there,
yeah,
doing the sound.
But you talk about him like a fourth musician nowadays.
Absolutely, from the beginning on. Yeah, because what I remember very well was when we started rehearsing for Tent, we didn't have a room to rehearse. So we were offered a huge storage building from, in those days, still CBS. And then Paul, of course, he was very much interested, of course, in electronic sound effects. You could already buy it in those days. And he found this particular apparatus from Yamaha, this delay line thing, the black the E-1010. And that made some of the very important sounds for Tent. That was one of his inventions, you might say. That's how Paul's career, in fact, with the band started.
Yeah, yeah. And he kept on doing that all those years. First, of course, we worked with, real studios, and of course, real engineers. that was the process.
You went
to Whistlelord, you went to
Relight,
Soundpush.
Soundpush, yeah.
But when we switched to more working in our space, in our WAV, that was the part of Paul, of course.
Yeah.
First, it was recording demos or parts of albums, like Omsk.
Yeah.
And later, of course, with Pièce de Résistance was in the Dutch Mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where Paul was sitting in a control room. And
which is a big word for what it was.
It was just a separate room, but not sound-wise. The sound we made on the floor in the WAV were going through the wall. But Paul was able to manage to mix the sound of In the Dutch Mountains to the 2-track, and that was it.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, let's say when we would have invited a normal engineer.
Yeah.
He would have refused the job.
Probably.
I'm quite sure. No. Paul knew the room, the sound. He was able to manage it there.
And he also had very, very bright ideas. We were talking about the album Hank. We were talking about this. You were visiting the WAV and you were amazed about what we did and what we heard. But a lot of that sound, these sort of explosive effects were all, that's what he did. He was a big part in creating that sound. Of course, the sampling Robert John brought in was an enormous step.
Yeah, but Paul was not equalizing that.
No.
In another studio, you would okay,
we make
it a little bit cleaner, because many recordings we did when they went to the cutting room,
because
we were working with the cutting room to make albums final. Most of the time we got these phone calls back, hey boys, it's impossible, we cannot do this.
Too explosive.
So we had struggles on that part.
Isn't that perfect that you get somebody who is like learning on the job, who is not a sound engineer by education, with an adventurous group of musicians like you are?
Yep. He was as adventurous in this respect. Absolutely.
And of course, when you are, let's say, a professional engineer, you work with a variety of bands. You work with 10, maybe 20. Or if successful, you work with many. Yep. So you're more or less in a world of concessions all the time, just trying to manage being in between the producer, in between the band. We did Taste, and of course, Paul and we were not in that situation.
No.
We just did what we did.
Yeah.
And he's the one band engineer.
As a matter of fact, the same goes for Art.
Exactly.
He just does the nits.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's not the manager who does like
he didn't want
this 17 different groups and waits for like which one is successful.
That's what normally happens. Yeah.
That's what normally happens.
And of course, what was offered him many, many times. We buy only the nits. Well, okay, that's my decision.
That's great.
Yeah.
And on to another family member, the other brother, Telma.
Tom.
The youngest brother.
He's amazing in the way he developed. It's, if we're talking about things you teach yourselves, he is one fine example of that.
Yeah,
he just started off with no knowledge of how lighting systems would work. He all developed it in all those years, and it's amazing. His great speciality is what you see there is almost nothing, creating an immense fantasy world in the lighting, but also in the way he constructs it. It's amazing what he can do, and also avoiding the mainstream light engineering stuff.
That's very important.
That's very important.
That's what Tom is so fitting so well through the years. He came in like the little brother of Paul.
To be honest,
helping us a little bit, being part of the crew, the traveling crew.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he did more and more in the lights, and that is not a professional career. And Tom is just part of our crazy way of making music and things.
Yeah.
He always surprises us. We're doing things that you have, you don't expect.
He has this like amazingly positive power. The Nits crew was known in Dutch theater land as like, oh, when those guys come in, you have a good time.
Yeah.
You know, instead of like usually it's like, oh, it's this crew again. Well, okay, you know, but when the Nits crew came in, welcome.
Really
important.
Also for us.
Yeah. They also fool around with the subject.
They
can handle that. And meanwhile, do their work very, very wonderful and serious. But in the meantime, just fool around and enjoy it.
When he unpacks his material for the stage show, they look at it and they think, what is going to happen to our beautiful stage? And when it's all set up and he switches on the light and goes like, whoa! It's just always like this. It's amazing. It's really amazing.
Yeah.
both of you are members of a band, which is, as for a sound man and a light man, something unusual.
Yeah, it is unusual,
but it happened.
How did that come about then?
Well, Paul was first. Let's.
I know Hank from my 16th year at school.
Okay.
And we also did some. I was playing guitar at that time also. It started from another band. I was always there anyway. So,
not as a musician, were you?
Not as a musician. No, I sometimes played guitar, but for, I think, one performance. I saw one photograph of me with the rest, but I'm not good at that. Anyway, I had a tape deck. That makes you popular. And from that time, I think everything was always shared with everybody. I had a car
and a tape deck. Well, that comes in handy with
the other ones didn't have that. So,
and nobody wanted to do the sound, or
sort of. But Alex also wanted to do the sound.
So the first bass player.
In fact, he stepped out of the band and started his own studio. So.
And then you did a lot of growing up together with the band that you're now part of.
Yeah, we always did everything together, and I also did the accounting because I studied in that direction. It's like Hank always made all the designs because he studied that. Rob was the engineer, so he built cases and everything.
It's like a family enterprise, you might say.
I was living in the center. I rented a whole house, which I couldn't pay for, and I sublet Tom our story. And then from some, I don't know what's the reason you came along, but We didn't have much.
The band was getting busier, and I think we had our first hit.
Yeah,
It must be around the time of Tutti Ragazzi, and they had a huge amount of shows to do.
Yeah.
So they could use some help. And of course, there was no serious light system for the band in those days. It were the days that you basically, when you did a show, you came into an empty hall. You had to bring everything yourself. You had to bring the speakers and the lamps and whatever. So it was more work than nowadays.
Yeah, it's also true.
So they could use some help. And I was a student and eager to do something with the band. And not being able to play, I just went along with the...
But both of you, it seems like you learned on the job. Is that correct?
Yeah,
definitely. I was trained to be a teacher.
So was I.
So was Tom. Yep.
Okay. I mean, you've accompanied this band since the beginning.
Yeah.
You came along and it's about 45 years.
6 years later, yeah.
Are you surprised the way that it's gone?
Yeah, I never expected that the band would live this long. I had to, at a certain point, make a decision for a certain job, and then I would give up the band. And everybody, of course, said, no, well, in 5 years you can forget this band, and
the
band went on, and the solid job went bankrupt. Anyway, the company in 5 years. That was the funny thing.
But everybody turned professional in 1980, if I'm not mistaken.
Something like that. You couldn't live from it really. You needed to have some extra things. I had some other jobs as well. In the beginning, there was not really much money.
Yeah, but you just wanted to do it.
So I was a student, and I thought, well, it's really cool to be with the band in general. And then this band started going abroad. I said, okay, well, I'll go along for this period. And then this thing became bigger, and the hits became bigger, and we got started traveling through Europe. And I was all the time thinking, well, this period, I'll just stick with the band, and then we'll see. This went on until now.
Yeah. Same for you?
Same for me. But at a certain moment, you don't think you will go on for another small period. At a certain moment, it's just a thing you wanted to do.
You took the decision to stay and to do this for the rest of your life.
For the rest of my life, and always the idea of, well, if it stops, then I have to find something else. But
no plan B anymore.
With the Dutch Mountains, challenge was to go on a two-track. That was not done before. Before that, in the studio, there was always another technician as well. And from that moment, not anymore. We did a lot ourselves in the studio before that also, but after Dutch Mountains, it's almost all our own things, which means that I have to do all the technical stuff.
But yes, I mean, do you consider yourself a sound engineer, you know, like a traditional one, or?
No, well, I hardly work with other bands and persons, so I'm grown with the rest, what they're doing, and they're also not very traditional in working.
Would you agree, both of you, that it's very visual music?
Yeah, I would definitely. I don't know what separates visual music from non-visual music, but
I think that let me explain. It conjures up images.
That's correct. That's an easy part for me. I have another job. I work at the Paradiso. I get the club in Amsterdam. I get bands in front of me, and I will do a light show. On my way there, I listen to the music of the band, and I try to sort of visualize what can I do with this music. And sometimes it's very easy, and sometimes you get a notion of a color that would fit, and sometimes nothing happens. And with the Nits, it's really on this visual side that you get images and colors or whatever. Yeah, that's an easy thing with their music, definitely.
This visual music with somebody who has a very strong idea visually of how that band should present itself.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a batch of songs. So how do you go about devising something?
It's not all made from one master plan. Of course, you pick your influences. I look at the general atmosphere in the band by the time the LP or the CD comes out. You have the cover design, which will paint a certain atmosphere. Like, I'm always looking for sort of visual novelties which I can use, and that is an ongoing process. And sometimes I gather my things and I construct something which is usable. It has to be a sort of simple construction which you can build in little time, which I can build by myself. We don't have a big crew. We don't have money for very expensive stage setups. So, well, it's...
There's something that always struck me is all those lamps on stage that don't look anything like lamps that usually would appear on a stage, on a rock stage.
Yeah, well, anything that gives light is useful, of course. Yeah. And, well, it's like Pot told about the music, that you're not bound to all sort of rituals and traditions. They don't go for us. We are free to do different. If I want to put a lamp on the floor or put it somewhere on a table or whatever, I'm free to do that. It happens that Hank has a sort of complete image, and then of course we will use it. Like, we had this tour where Hank made all the videos. We had a few tours of that. Okay, that's useful, and I can do a few things around it, but that's leading then. But on other occasions, Hank has no time at all. The tour is coming, and maybe he's still working on the design of the album cover. So then I take my chance and
design
and do
something.
My thing. And I also remember that I had this idea of... For the doing the dishes tour, it was I started collecting all sort of lamps I found on the street and what people throw away. I brought in. I just mentioned it to Hank. Hank, I'm thinking of doing that, and then Hank says, "Yeah, we might." It's never an extensive discussion about that. I mention a little thing, and sometimes as he said, then it means better not. And I changed my course, and then, of course, Hank is involved in the design, but it's usually, especially for the lights, it's my thing.
Do you have any favorite stage designs for a particular tour, or?
No, I like most of them. I have this, it was my Corona design. I made completely weird objects in the Corona time, and it was a really workable stage setup, and I was sort of planning to tour with it on the last tour as well, but then our studio got in flames, and then everything was lost. Yeah, that's something.
We did a few gigs with it.
Yeah, the small tour.
It's even one of the theaters, the theater boss came to Tom and he wanted to make an exhibition out of it after the tour. It was very nice.
In fact, the older I get, the more of my own character I can get into it. And it's rarely a sober, strict thing. It's always lamps everywhere. And as much as I can bring in, as much as I can fit on a stage in an afternoon, I will put there.
I'm fighting it, fighting it, fighting it till I am winning. Rewinding it, finding it, finding it to the beginning. Emma. I'm walking to your house. Hello, 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 hello. It's like driving a car by looking in the mirror. Forwards and reverse, I'm touching the walls in the corner.
The Nits form an ever-growing family inside the music business, including musicians, manager, sound and lighting engineer, musician friends of the musicians, but also record company people and concert promoters who have stayed with the band forever. One of these is Tapio Koyos from Finland, another Bernard Batson from France. Bernard spent his life in music. He has worked as a concert organizer, booking agent, manager of world-famous band Mano Negra, and he is a big fan of the Nits.
Je pense que c'est ça qu'on aime tous avec ce groupe. C'est qu'il faut s'attendre à tout.
We love this group because we can always expect the unforeseen, says Bernard Batson.
Moi aussi, j'ai une assez longue carrière, comme le groupe et le groupe en fait.
At first, I was a DJ, then I worked in record shops in my hometown of Bordeaux until I got my own store, where I sold the first two albums of the Nits. Being a fan of the Talking Heads and XTC, I appreciated the sound of the Dutch band.
J'étais fan déjà parce que bon, ça me rappelait des groupes que j'aimais comme les Tokinets, Sixtici, etc.
Bernard then moved to Paris and became the head of programming at the famous festival Printemps de Bourges.
J'ai pu les programmer au Printemps de Bourges en 1980.
I programmed them on an evening called Euroc. They were on the same bill as Swiss singer-songwriter Stefan Eicher and the Belgian band T-Simatic and their singer Arno. I paid a lot of attention to the music coming from the European continent. To me, the Nits are the prime example of Europeanness. They are not Dutch. Their nationality is European.
Du groupe européen. Ça n'est pas un groupe hollandais. C'est un groupe qui a la nationalité européenne.
In time, Bernard founded his own production company, Azimut. And over the course of four decades, he has produced many shows of the Nits in Paris, beginning with l'Olympia, one of the temples of French culture.
Était l'Olympia à Paris. On a commencé fort.
All the resounding, almost mythical names of Parisian venues, ensuite, clubs and theaters. Le Casino de Paris, l'Alhambra, l'Européen, la Cigale, le Café de la Danse, le Petit Bain, le Bataclan, and finally, le Trianon, world famous places.
Et puis maintenant, voilà, on se retrouve au Trianon.
Bernard doesn't only share a professional life with the Nits. Over the years, a special friendship has developed between band and promoter.
Ah, mais c'est une amitié très solide. Ce sont devenus des amis.
It is a very solid friendship, but beyond that, I have the greatest respect for their business demeanor. They pushed do-it-yourself to the maximum. They produce themselves, they shoot their own videos, etc. I met many bands in my career, but it is with them that I feel that complicity, be it human, artistic, and also political. Their European identity is very important to me.
Pour moi, l'engagement européen, c'est quelque chose d'extrêmement important.
Speaking of friendship, there is a special memory for Bernard when the band asked whether they could shoot their new video at his apartment in Paris for the song Adieu Subbahnhof, which Bernard considers to be a hymn to Europe. We shot part of the clip in the courtyard of the apartment house where I was living. Henk was playing the accordion. All of a sudden, la concierge, the caretaker, stood in the door at the back watching the scene, and her dog joined her. And Henk, with his accordion, waltzes towards her. Just imagine that a band that you've been a fan of asks you to shoot their video in your home. It was magnificent. A hymn to Europe, also a hymn to France, which appears many times in the oeuvre of the Nits. There are traces of the films of Jacques Tati, of surrealistic painter René Magritte, of the comic books of Hergé, to cite but three examples of francophone culture in the oeuvre of the Nits, this most European of bands. And then there is the way they function as a working unit.
Je pense pas qu'ils le font pour un public.
They do not aim at a possible audience. They do not calculate their next step to satisfy commercial success. They just express themselves. I mean, they could have exploited the success of In the Dutch Mountains, and 99% of all bands would have at least tried to follow up this success with a similar album. They didn't, and came back with something completely different, Giant Normal Dwarf. And this is an artistic outlook.
À l'époque où ils étaient signés sur une multinationale, ils étaient uniquement en distribution. Ça n'est pas la
Even when they had a contract with a multinational label, Sony Records, it was only a distribution deal. So it wasn't Sony who told them to work with this producer or that producer or to go in a certain direction. They never listened to any of this. And I find this exceptional, very artistic. And at the same time, also political, because they are working on the structures of the music business. They have this humility and this warmth that I find exceptional. At the same time, their work is demanding. It is conceived with an artistic vision of the highest level. One often hears that they should be known all over the world. That's true. They are one of the best pop or rock bands that have ever existed. But there is a price for the freedom that they enjoy. I know of the difficulties that you face if you want to be as totally independent as they are. And this has been going on for 50 years. I have more and more respect for them.
J'ai de plus en plus d'admiration pour eux.
Then I asked Bernard for his three favorite Nits songs.
Trois?
There's a whole bunch of songs that spring to mind. I could do 30, but three? That's impossible. It is like the work of a painter, you can prefer the blue period artistic development. I have a Nits playlist that I constantly renew and remodel. It is endless.
c'est sans fin.
Songs can stick in your mind because of the moment when you first meet them. Neskyo is such a moment for me. Back in 1983, Rudi Feldman, my one-time boss and favorite music dealer, called me up to inform me that a new single by our favorite Dutch band had been released. And didn't I want to come to the shop? I opened the door, and to this day I remember Rudy's smiling eyes as he announced from behind the counter that the Nits had gone completely mad.
C'était quoi le titre?
Neskyo.
Ouf, ouf, ah oui. Ah oui, alors là, mais moi j'adore ça.
I adore that. That was completely surreal and surprising back then. They allow themselves everything, even singing Italian bel canto. I love it. It is kitsch. Anyway, they are very capable of being kitschy. To fans, listening to a new Nits track or album is a special moment, a ceremony, says Bernard. A ceremony for the fans of this band that could have been massive and refused to go down that path. And the fans love them even more for that. A discerning group of people, they love a band that has decided to take a different direction with practically every release. If you follow them, you have to make an effort.
Pour les suivre, il faut faire des efforts.
July 24 at a cabin in the woods in Vierhouten in the Netherlands. Arvind Linnemann, Tizia van Krieken, Vera van der Poel, Molly Hartung, engineer Darren Hain, and yours truly have gathered to record some Nits songs from the period of the Wool album. Once a member of the family, always a member of the family.
Call me a stranger. Call me a fool. She's waiting on us in a jazz bon ton in Texas. Catfish on a plate, the kitchen's open late tonight. Diamonds in her mouth, sparkles when she shouts, hey you guys, I can wait here. It's sad, but we have to go. Call me a stranger.
Call me
all there. Love and hate, fish and bait. It's all there, it's all there. There's a sign, turn around at the end of a highway. I'm checking out on the Cactus Creek Motel today. It's sad, but I have to go.
Is done. We're sitting at a camping table in the garden, listening to the sounds of the woods after a nice dinner and some glasses of wine on this warm summer night. Thoughts return to what has happened during the day.
Yeah. I was sort of totally relaxed about trusting you all.
No
That's
question.
My family.
Yeah.
You know? It's going to be all
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
I have no clue what's happened, but it's going to be all right.
Yeah.
It's wonderful that you just can sit down in a beautiful place like this, and this comes out, you know. It doesn't feel like 14 years.
No.
You know, it's not about time, you know.
No,
exactly. It comes to a wonderful...
friendships.
Friendship, yeah. And I don't know what all comes together, you know. It's a new story.
I'm thinking about how we start, and there's always one of us who's just throwing a stone into the water,
yeah.
and then it's we're reacting on this movement.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, the first stones were thrown on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
WhatsApp,
yeah.
just a couple of ideas,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. You played some guitar.
Oh, let's take the outro to the
yeah.
intro.
Yeah.
New key.
Yeah.
That's it.
This beautiful guitar playing of you on the WhatsApp.
Yeah.
For example, or your chords with the piano.
Yeah.
I don't know for you, but I wasn't listening a lot to these songs as preparation.
No.
Because then you would listen like, how were we playing this?
And yeah.
It was in all our memories.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the nice experience.
To keep it fresh.
Yeah,
yeah.
To keep it fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we all just listen to the chords.
Yeah.
What chord? And you
yeah.
said, I want this key.
Yeah.
And then we transposed it to this key.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was it.
That
for
was
preparation.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sometimes fixated on actually the lyrics, and you think you need that understanding to know what is going on, really, to interpret
mm-hmm.
this, especially you as a singer, you know.
Yeah,
like
of course. My goal is to have a personal connection with it. And of course, I know Hank, so I think about him, and I think about my own, and so, and I think I need to have the freedom to interpret it in my life, or I don't know. So I make my own story out of it with the information I have of Hank. There's a wolf. You hear the wolf?
This is a cow.
Cow.
Is it a cow?
Yeah.
Wow.
Whoa.
What a sound.
Yeah.
Or a donkey.
It sounds more like a donkey.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
A donkey, yeah.